Welcome to Real Estate Dads Podcast. Today, I'm very excited about our guest, Matthew Roach. He has been parenting for over 30 years. He's been a parent since he was 17 years old, and in the last 5 years, walked away from a six-figure job to start what is now a thriving real estate business in wholesaling and fix and flipping. Not only that, he has some great tools on how to teach kids financial literacy. The things he's doing are incredible, so I'm super excited for him to be here. Hey, Matthew, welcome to the show.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
We're glad to have you. So just for everyone listening, Matthew and I met at an event through
Kent Clothier's.
The Boardroom. Boardroom Mastermind. Kent Clothier's, one of his mastermind programs. And, and we'd had this conversation where we were actually just talking in the hall. It was outside of the event. And, and at the time my wife had just given birth. So I had what month was that? That was in April or May?
Denver. That would have been I'm going to say that was July of 23.
Yeah. So my son was just 7 months old. So I was a new dad. And you kind of shared with me, you were like, yeah, I've got a bunch of kids and I'm going to let you go into that. And you also kind of expressed to me, kind of the ways that you were, kind of engaging with your kids, kind of having them interact with your business, interact with what it takes to kind of make money, kind of starting them out from a very young age, which I was really impressed by. Because, for me, when I was growing up, my family, I love my parents. But, financial education was really not part of what I had growing up. So when I met you, I was really kind of like, wow, he's doing a lot of these things that I wish I had, even as a kid, from my own parents who, did fine, but my parents were both government employees. And, and that was something that, I just found really, it shouldn't be as impressive as it was, but it was, it was groundbreaking for me. I was just like, man, this guy's already got small kids that he's educating in financial education and investing and how to invest, and how to do these things. And I guess I would love for you to, expand on that, and we'll get into some of these questions, but if you want to just go back to that philosophy, I would love to have the listeners hear that.
Sure. Absolutely, Max. I grew up in a single family household. My parents got divorced. Probably would say I was about 2 years old. And so money growing up for us was an issue, right? As it is for many Americans across the nation who have a single parent. My dad was certainly in my life. He lived on one end of the town and my mother lived on the other end of the town, but they were divorced. And I really realized when I was young, I didn't know anything about money. I didn't know anything about money through high school. I didn't know anything about money in my early adulthood. I just knew how to go work and exchange that time for money. Well, quite some time later, I have my sons, and I thought, man, I really want them to understand what money is, right? Money is just paper, right? It's just printed paper. It has no value except the value that you place on it, right? So what I wanted to impress upon them is you can have this money too. And here's how you do it, right? Every deal that I, when I first started, every deal I had, I would bring my who's now getting ready to be 16 next month, and my 12-year-old who's actually upstairs, he had a sore throat, so he stayed home today. I started letting them understand the business model, right? What we're going to do, guys, we're going to go buy, we're going to go into the nicest neighborhood we can. We're going to go buy the crummiest home, and we're going to force appreciation into that home. And then we're going to sell that home for more than all these other homes. How do you do that? How do you do that, Dad? Well, it was a step-by-step breaking down. I used to I'd go out and get big deals done, $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 in cash, where, the people would pay me an upfront fee or a deposit on a property. And I would bring that cash home, and I would just quite literally in garbage bags or little cases, and I'd sit my seven-year-old down, and he'd be picking up, thousands and thousands. Like, I can't. So I've always indoctrinated them into what money is. Money doesn't buy you all the happiness. And I know plenty of, I'm sure you do, Max. I'm sure you do, Trevor. You know plenty of wealthy people who have a lot of money, but they're completely miserable. So what I tried to do is put, your happiness doesn't follow your money trail, with my kids. So I tried to really develop that in them when they were young. Kind of the same way my dad did. He didn't have a lot of money. He worked up until his, you know, maybe 8 years before he passed away. You know, things were always tight for him, but it was the financial literacy that I understood that he didn't have, right? I understood that he was taught and he was brought up, he graduated in 66. He was taught at that time that you go out and you trade, you know, your irreplaceable time for a very replaceable amount of money, right? And so that's the exchange he did his whole life. So I realized that growing up and seeing that man, I really got to teach my kids about taxes. I got to teach them about financial literacy. I got to teach them about, you know, their credit scores, how to network well, right? So all of those kind of things I kind of watched. And just because my dad didn't necessarily have those things, I realized that he didn't have those things and that I needed to learn them. And not only learn them for myself, but be able to pass those on to kind of change some generational things that had been previously
Dude, that's awesome.
in my family.
Well, I mean, you know, it's not just your family. Yeah, no, that's awesome. Yeah, and I don't think it's just your family. I mean, you know, I think most of us kind of recognize that the U.S. U.S. education system is massively delinquent in teaching entrepreneurship, yeah. all the things you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Taxes, how to work with money, it's just non-existent. It is completely just not even present at all. And that's something that, you know, you picked up from seeing your father and were able to bring it in very early. I mean, that for me, that was something I had to learn really quite late, I would argue. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's
When did you learn, Matthew, that like, because I mean, I my dad was the same. I think the 50s, 60s generation parents, right? Like for sure the schooling system, they didn't have the internet. So like they couldn't go find out there's a different way. And the schooling system created subservient workers. And that was a position of honor, right? Being Absolutely. A government employee was like great because you know you're going to get decent pay and decent retirement. Yeah. And that was the era, right? And so like that's the era that my father was raised under. So I was oblivious to how to create wealth or that it was even possible. I thought for the longest time, I swear to God, I thought you just get lucky.
Everybody does, Trevor.
Getting rich Everybody is just does. A problem. but you create your own luck, yeah. right? It's not like you can't just wait for it to happen. Absolutely. You got to go make it happen. It's like, how did that happen? How did that light bulb happen for you where you were like, there is another way and I can affect it? I can affect
absolutely, guys. So let me digress here about almost 5 years now, a little over 4.5. I was in operations management for a very large steel manufacturer. Right, I worked that job for 20 plus years. I started that job when I was right about 24 years old. Okay, I was making a little over $100,000, and in my family, oh my gosh, as soon as you hit that six figure, you were set. Like that was like, you know, for whatever reason in my own particular family, if you said you made six figures, even if it was $101,001, you were in that subset group, right? So
yeah,
what happened was I was 24. All these guys, they were much older than me. I came in, I was kind of, you know, working alongside of them and also managing them. They were 40s. 50s. I was a kid. You know, I was a kid. And what all these guys, I realized that all these guys had been making money for years, you know, 30 years, 35 years, 40 years, some of them. And I would, you know, they would have, you know, a Christmas party or a birthday party or a celebration. And they'd say, oh, Matt, come out to my house. I go out to their house. Just this little two-bedroom shack or something like that. I'm thinking, you've been making... In the last 10 years, I know you've made $1 million working here, you know, or very, very close to that, $850,000. What have you done with your money? Now, I didn't ask that. I'm not that rude. But this is the thoughts that I thought, you know, why are you still struggling? And it was just a pattern of ignorance, right? And it was generational. It just passed down from the next to the next to the next to the next. So I digress. So when I was 24, I started working that job. I worked that job for almost 20 years. The steel industry in America, as you two probably aren't very familiar with, it was on a bubble, right? And it was about to blow, right? And so that meant, you know, job transfers, job losses, layoffs, all of the bad stuff, right? And I was in on those meetings at my company, and I kind of felt that it was coming. So I remember I came home, guys. I told my wife, and this is certainly a feather in my wife's cap, and she's not here to hear me say this, but I've said it to her before. I came home and I told her, you know, this is after making good money for a lot of years. We got a big house, a big old mortgage, you know, all these, you know, we got a lot of stuff going on. I told her, I came home, it was a Wednesday. I said, I won't go back tomorrow. She said, why? I said, listen, I just can't work for somebody else. It's just not going to pay. It's just not going to play out. I see the end. I've already dealt with people who have quite literally been in my shoes, and they've pushed it out 30 plus years, and they get to the end and they retire at 65. They're dead at 71. Right? It just happened. It was just the way the cycle. I could almost guarantee you. And the guys who died quickly were the guys who retired and they didn't have a hobby, or they didn't have somewhere else to put their energy. So what they would do, they would sit on their couch, they would go out in their yards or whatever, piddle around, and invariably, right, they were depressed, right? They were alone, right? Because here's another situation that also plays out in man and woman, you know, the dynamics, is that women keep their friends. They keep their close knit of friends that they can call on when they're having problems. We, as men, we do not, right? Typically, you might have one or two guys in your life that you'll call and say, hey, everything's falling apart for me. I need help. Most men are too macho. We're raised that way. You're independent. Take care of your family. But women aren't like that, right? So that's the reason why I, in my own opinion, that I feel like women outlive us men. So I can't really remember where I was going with that. What was your direct question to that, Max?
Is there catalyst on making the plans to have your kids have the financial literacy? And maybe that's...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. So that, like I said, it all really just stems back from my ignorance. I didn't have this. Nobody laid out a plan for me. They told me from the time I was young, go get a job, go get a college degree, go get a job, go work for somebody, go work for IBM, AT&T, whoever, right? And you work for them and you have a stable life. But your life is dependent not on your own merits, but on the merits of that company. So when that company goes down, you go down with it. Your life is tied intrinsically to that entity, or your finances, or your income, or whatever.
Yeah, no, I really agree with you on this, you know, because there's this idea that when you work for someone else, that you're mitigating risk in exchange for, you know, a call to stable paycheck and comfortable life. But then you find out, as you did with the steel industry, that it maybe wasn't actually quite as stable. You know, I mean, I learned that, you know, in my W-2 jobs, which were all fantastic. I learned so much from every one of these groups that I worked with. But what I also really felt, you know, oftentimes, and this is a bit of a different topic, but I felt like I had stopped learning. I'd become a staff member for a large organization, were paid well, but, you know, but I felt like, you know, the tasks that I was doing were very, very repetitive. And to actually expand my responsibilities in my mind in regards to doing new things and kind of growing, it really required me to do a lot more, which sometimes when you're working as a cog in a wheel set of a bigger company, there's not really that opportunity.
100%.
You know, they want you doing what they tell you. And, you know, and Matthew, I want to back up only just a quick moment for people who are, you know, driving, or they're somewhere where they don't have the visual here. Matthew, how old are you?
I was about to say, man,
I just turned 50.
Okay. And you look good.
Thank you, Dylan.
So 50, and refresh me, how many kids do you have?
Five, right? So like I told you about a month ago, my story is very, very unique, right? I told you.
Hold on, Matthew. You left us hanging for a second. I need to know what happened. You went home and told your wife, I'm not going back to my six-figure job tomorrow.
I did. So, you know, thank God that I have a very supportive wife. But here's exactly what she said to me, guys. I mean, I right in the kitchen directly above me. I came in the house. I said, listen, hon, I'm not going back. I know I had some money on the shelf, right? I had some savings, you know, that I knew that we would be able, we weren't going to lose a house in a few months or a year, right? The bills are still going to go on. I mean, I've made some other pretty good investments prior to, so we weren't going to be indigent. But I did. I came home and I told her, I said, listen, I'm not going back. You know, I'm just wasting my life. This is just an internal feeling that, you know, you're just wasting your life. You've just like you said, Max, I've already accelerated to where the height of that I'm going to go in this company. There's nowhere else for me to even go, right? So I came home and told her that, and I'll never forget it, gentlemen. She looked at me and she said, you've wanted everything you've done in your life and you'll win at something else. And that right there was the seed for me to continue on the journey that I'm on now, right? That gave me, you know, I always kind of play it both ways. What if she had said, either you go back to that job or we're getting a divorce?
It's
or something like,
you know, people say things like, oh, happy wife, happy life. And I kind of look at it and I go, supportive wife, happy life.
There you go.
You know, it's just so funny because, and I've mentioned this to several people, because, you know, before I got married, I'd had these older guys who'd be like, don't get married, you know, and a lot of these guys were talking from a, you know, whatever personal things were going on in their life. And, you know, and I've loved it. Uh-huh. I've loved it, you know, and I definitely see the changing nature of relationships from, you know, when you're, I'll call it dating to engaged to then married. Sure. And then, but fast forward even further to major life stresses and decisions. And are you, you know, partnering in such a way that you're going to be able to move forward through these things? And that's so great that your wife, you know, said that to you.
Yeah.
You've been a winner. You're going to keep being a winner. You're going to keep achieving and, you know, and you're going to keep doing great because, you know, I think that a lot of, men, you know, have that struggle that there's going to be this situation where there is opportunity, but doing the work to get there, because you kind of mentioned savings, you knew you're going to have to do it. You're going to have some period of buildup, but you knew it was worth it. You saw that future, you know, being your own entrepreneur and that was going to be worth it. And she saw that and said,
yeah, absolutely.
Yes, I agree with you. Not even I agree. You should do this. She told you that she saw that before you didn't even need to ask.
She did, Max. And I tell you, it really, you know, it really just let out. I could breathe. You know, I remember that whole drive home, that 25 minute drive home, thinking, I'm telling her today, I've already got the box in the back, man. I'm not going back.
Yeah.
Right. And for her to be so supportive. Now, I mean, granted, we're not newlyweds. This year in July 17th, we'll celebrate 20 years of marriage. We've been together 5 years before we got married. So, actually, we got together quite literally the week that I started that steel mill job, right? So, you know, that support system was crucial for me. I think had she,
it matters,
hesitated and tried to say, hey, maybe you know, stick with what you've been doing, and we'll play that out and see where that goes. Here's the thing. I know when I would have got to be 60, 65, 66, I would have had the deepest regrets of my life. And that's the one thing I tell everybody. I just can't live with the regrets. I can fail 100 times, 1,000, 10,000 times. I can't face the fact or live with the idea that as I get to an age of, I really start to, you know, get up there in years, that I have that regret. Or maybe I could have started a corporation. Maybe I could have got a business. Maybe my kids won't have to struggle because I didn't take that chance.
Yeah. You know, and that goes back to a lot of that, you know, you can't have success without failure.
Yeah.
You know, if you're going through life and you have no failures, you know, what are you playing in, you know, what circle are you playing with that you had no ability to actually have a failure? It probably means you're not trying hard enough. You know, and
you're not trying. You're not trying at all if you haven't failed. I mean, there's that old saying, if you haven't failed, you haven't tried.
Matthew, what are you doing to like foster or keep this? Because that is a super supportive thing for your wife to say to you, to just instantly just support.
Instantly,
you.
She said it to me too, Trevor. That was her next response. She didn't have to go think about it. She said that off the cuff.
just like automatic. Yeah. What do you do? What do you do intentionally to just foster that, keep that relationship strong?
That's a very, very good question, Trevor. One I don't believe I've ever thought about, but I would say it's always, you know, pouring that trust into her. She completely trusts me. She lost her father as well. She understands that I'm going to pick up and I'm going to move this family forward one way or the other. So she's been around me since I was young, you know. She understands how I move and how I think. So I think for her, she understood that once I put my mind to this, or whatever that thing is, that's what's going to materialize, right? It's not about so much the outside circumstances as it is mindset and mentality. In my opinion.
Yeah, just like alignment there.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
It's like a natural alignment. That's awesome.
And Matthew, on business, you know, we cut into, you know, a lot of the dad stuff right away. So tell us about your business.
Sure. I own Guardian Home Buyers. That's the business that I started 4.5 years ago. I started it as a solo entrepreneur. Didn't know anything about wholesaling. Didn't know a whole lot about real estate. I had already made some investments previous to me ever jumping into this thing by myself, but went out, had bought some multiplexes and stuff like that to kind of, I just knew real estate or stocks was the way to go. Stocks were just too damn, they were just too tricky. Like, I didn't understand enough about stocks, right? I can't give somebody $100,000, tell them to go invest my money, and I don't even know enough about it myself.
They don't even know anything about it. I'm in total agreement. Stocks, you know, you can read all about the stocks, then you find out how much, you know, control manipulation of the market there actually is by like a very, very small portion of people. And it's
very small amount of people.
There's like two or three people that like consistently get it right. Everyone else is just throwing darts.
That's the truth. So I understood for myself, for my own avenue as real estate. So it took a long time. I probably started studying wholesaling and had done my first wholesale deals maybe 6.5 years ago. Well, you know, I was still working and I would just, but it wasn't wholesaling to me. It was hustling. I didn't understand the concept of wholesaling. I understood the concept of finding a product that was wanted by somebody, being able to buy it, business 101, being able to buy it at a discount and then sell it at a higher price point than what I purchased for, right? And once I figured that out, I remember I used to sit in my office and I was supposed to be out there working, and I'd be sitting there watching Max Maxwell. I don't know if you guys know who Max Maxwell is, but he's a wholesaler out of Atlanta, Georgia. And I just used to listen to all his YouTube videos. And so that's kind of how we started Guardian Home Buyers. Guardian Home Buyers, we have acquisitions managers, we have dispositions managers, we have transaction coordinators. Thought about buying a title company a few months ago, kind of passed on that because it was something that I'm a research guy. I didn't know enough about it at the time that it was presented to me. So, you know, we've definitely got our hands in all of that in the wholesale side. We also fix and flip. We do pretty well on our fix and flips. And we buy and hold properties for long-term appreciation.
Great.
What markets are you focused in, Matthew?
Sure. I'm in Youngstown, Ohio, Canton, Cleveland, Akron, a little stuff in the Pittsburgh area, but not as much. And I was in Columbus. I'm no longer in Columbus market.
What was going on in Columbus? Is it just seeming dicey, or was it a business, or what was it?
It just wasn't the business model that I really wanted to go with. It was me getting out of what makes me money and jumping into more of an exploratory funnel, so to speak. And it wasn't practical. I was spreading myself too thin.
Yeah, with right now in the market also, you know, it's really important. I mean, I was asking that a little bit. I wasn't sure if it was a market response. I mean, because right now, you know, the tide is in many ways going out for a lot of markets right now. And, you know, if there's, you know, some, you know, Columbus isn't a market that, you know, we really hunt in at all, but, and in regards to, you know, So transitioning a little bit into talking about your family,
sure.
What are, you know, I'll call it challenges that you see that you're kind of dealing, I don't want to say necessarily dealing with directly, but that you just see in the market. Things are, as a father, things are changing. And we see, we're all kind of, you know, are in this environment where, you know, 30 years ago, massively different environment for raising kids as today. Like we all, you know, when we were significantly younger, there were not a lot of these things. Social media wasn't a thing. I don't feel like there was as much when I was a kid, you know, really talk about a lot of the stuff that I worry about my child being, you know, yeah, I guess pushed on him, you know, at an age when he's in schools. You know, what, you know, are there anything that are, you know, current topics for you that you really see and you just go, hey, look, I've got to be really on top of this with raising my kids.
Man, you just opened up Pandora's box there, brother. Serious topics. Things like, how much time are you spending on the internet? Are you going outside? What sports are you doing? There's so many, there's just so many different things that we didn't grow up with. You know, I grew up in the 80s, right? Late 70s, 80s, right? You went outside every day. That's where your friend group was. They were outside. Now they're inside on computers and on phones and on tablets. And I have about 5.5 acres here. So, you know, I make my sons are outside. You got to go outside, right? They're in multiple sports. Usually they're in two sports a season. So we got basketball, football, baseball, soccer, track, cross country. And that keeps my boys very, very active. Another thing is as a father, it's very easy to fall into the role that was placed there before you even became a father. So when I say that, I mean, typically, a father is a hard and a mother is a soft. And a father is a dictator of the house, right? You have to really extract yourself in this day and age out of that dictatorship. Instead of saying, you have to have some type of democracy with your kids now. You have to let them have a say in things, right? It's very, very important that your child be heard. And it's very, very important that you communicate with them. Not when I say communicate, I don't mean when your kid comes in the door from school 5 days a week. You say, hey, how was school? How was lunch? Anything exciting happen today? None of that. That's not communication. That's just me filling the void of
silence
that's between us. You know, when you know what I mean.
I do. That's you might be having a conversation, but that's not really engaging with them on a level that actually is hearing.
Exactly.
You know, on the social media,
you gotta sit down and talk to them.
On the social media side, you know, of what, you know, how much screen time they're getting. I gotta say, I really don't think that. Yeah, I guess I'm gonna say this. I don't think kids should have access to social media until they're 18. You know, there's when I was in college, you know, we used to do these we'd studies about, you know, the ethics of marketing to kids, ethics of marketing to children, you know, across the board. You know, and at the time it was a lot more based on, you know, kids' cereals or, you know, should cat meals be marketed to children? And, you know, was it ethical to market to kids? And at the time I was kind of like, you know, I didn't see much issue in these things. But now when you kind of put it on steroids, where all of us are constantly being marketed to by our devices, you know, and there's these, you know, studies that pretty much state that the humans' brains, you know, don't understand persuasive marketing until they're adults, which is really what we've kind of said is really the age of 18 that we've set just as a society. And I look at, you know, how much programming we as adults are, you know, unfortunately I don't want to say self-medicating with, but, you know, giving ourselves constantly by looking at, you know, whatever screens we are.
We're inundated.
We're inundated. And our kids are even more inundated. Huh? And they're being inundated by whoever is on the other side with a megaphone telling them whatever it is. And this has been a big one, you know, and I don't have teenage kids yet. You know, and Trevor and I on a previous call, we were talking about how we, you know, our expectations of how we think things are going to go when, you know, our kids are older, how we're going to make sure it goes exactly like we have planned. And we're like, I don't think it's not going to go like this. You know, we have this idea how it's going to go.
It's not. I got news, gentlemen.
I know, right? But one of those things is, you know, is I think about social media and I go, you know, I would like to be able to have my child have the things that the other kids have so he doesn't feel like he was left out. But part of me also just looks at how damaging for society. I really do believe that social media has been damaging for society. Sadly. And I like,
it's hugely comparison, right? So back before social media, back before everybody had a computer in their pocket, all you had, Max and Trevor, was what was in your direct community, your direct line of sight.
Yeah.
Now the whole world is at your beck and call 24/7.
24/7. Yeah.
And anything that's going on, unscrupulous, you know, these kids find ways to get the dark web. They can quite literally order drugs to their home. You understand? Like, that's how serious it is. And you would have no idea. That's why I go back to the communication. You have to...
Wait, through what website?
What's that?
The dark website.
I was joking. I said, wait, through what website? So, okay, so your kids, and they shared this with you. They said, hey, there's dark web out there. And they told you. So they let you know that somehow they had already had knowledge of this...
Of course.
This other world of...
And you know why they told me?
Because you communicate with them.
Who can tell you anything, huh?
Tell me anything. I don't judge them when they tell me something harsh or something that I don't want to hear. You can't, how can somebody, you how old are your kids, Trevor?
1 and 4. So the four-year-old.
You boys
is
got
girls, two girls.
Matthew, I totally agree with you. You know, and as I tell this story, I'll never forget the time I was in the car with my father and we're driving somewhere and he goes, you know, Max, you can tell me anything. And I go, anything? And he goes, yeah. And I go, well, what about like underage drinking? And I wasn't a big underage drinker or anything. And my dad turns and he goes, if I ever find out you've been drinking underage, he's so mad.
Yeah.
And, that's the thing. You know, and he was, I mean, he did not have that ability to be that communicative about some of these topics. Now, my dad in later years has been fantastic in a lot of ways, but I always remembered that, that I could not talk to him about certain things. And so that's great that you established it to be better.
Are you a no yelling household, Matthew?
What's that?
Are you a no yelling household?
Yes, I am. Yeah. I mean, well.
No one's perfect, but I mean, that's the intention of your home.
For me to yell, it's really, everything's got to be going really left. And that goes with my wife and that goes with my friends and peers. I'm not going to ever yell at you, right? I don't need that direction. I don't need that miscommunication, right? Because that just causes a lot of problems. But to what you were saying, Max, what your father said to you, I remember my dad said something very similar to me. And I was probably maybe 10, you know, right in that finite 9, 10 years old. And I remember, never forget, I had done something. I couldn't tell you what it was. Maybe got in a fight or something, got in some trouble in the neighborhood and came home and told my, and my dad, you know, back then, everybody was calling your parents before you ever even got home. So by the time you walked in the house, your dad already knew in my community. So I walked in the house, my dad already knew. And he just basically said, man, listen, son, you can tell me anything, right? He said, if you told me, and I'll never forget him saying this. He said, if you told me that you had something happened and, you know, you shot somebody, you could tell me that. And I thought, man, he said, if you ever are out underage drinking and I was young, I was like 9, 10. And he was telling me, you know, when you're 12, 13, 14, 18, whatever, if you're out drinking, you can call me anytime. I'll come and get you. We won't talk about it till the next day. And when we do talk about it, we'll talk about it. It's not going to be instant disciplinary, you know, action taken and yelling and screaming and we're going to put you in a drug house or a drug home or something like that, a rehab, or it was none of that. It was always a very, very soft spot for my dad that I knew if I picked up the phone, no matter what it was, I could say, hey man, this is what we got going on. And then we would collectively come up with a game plan to get myself, extract myself out of it or get further into it, whichever way we needed to go. But he was always there for me for that. And that's something that I've always remembered and I certainly instilled in my kids. Like, listen, it's a big world and a lot of things are going to happen and you're going to be approached with all different kind of ways. You can always, before you make a decision, pick up that phone. Hey, Dad, let me run this by you for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
Right. That as long as I'm alive.
Once the, you know, your father's for, you know, boys and girls, you know, or both your parents, hopefully the only people who you can go to who do not have any kind of financial interest, hopefully in your giving you good advice or giving you coaching or things like that. You know, I mean, you talk about how many friends we have that, you know, are with us, you know, for our whole lives, how many people you can really rely on, you know, and I think that's just so important for parents to be able to do that with their kids.
It really is. It really is.
Yeah. I think about that one a lot with my, you know, and it's, for me, it's still, you know, all these ideas of how I'm planning on interacting with my son once we have more of these, you know, heavier topics, but you know, but they're just so, I can't help but think about them now and plan now.
How do you balance? I'm soaking like a sponge here, Matthew, honestly, man, because you got all this experience. So I'm just like, man, I got these questions that keep popping up when I hear you talk. And like one that's really hitting me is, you know, how do you balance, especially at a younger age, discipline of a sort, right? With, but also keeping things so that they can come to you.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
It makes full sense, Trevor. And here's what happened. So I didn't get back this far, but when I was 17, I found out my then girlfriend was pregnant. 17. So I was in high school. Didn't do anything crazy. You know, I wasn't out wiling, so the kids like to say. I was just, you know, got caught up in a moment, right? And that moment had some serious consequences. So when you're that young, all you can parent is from what you've been taught. Now, thank God that I didn't come from an abusive alcoholic, because I would have probably went that route, right? But the father that I came from was the kind, like, man, I think I got one spanking from my dad. My mother was the disciplinarian. You know, I couldn't even count the backhands and whippings I got from her, because she was serious. But my dad, I think I got one spanking, and he tells me about it when I was about 2 or 3 years old. He already told me about it when I was about 2 or 3 years, that he had to give it to me then. But you have to, when you're that young, you parent the way that you were taught to parent. So if you had a dad who was, you know, he was just a no fuss disciplinarian kind of dad, that's what you will be. That is exactly. Now at my age, my younger kids, they get a different version of me. They get a more relaxed version of me, but I'm still the same dad I was at 18. I am now at 50, but I'm just much more, relaxed. Like my oldest says, we would have never been able to get away with that, Dad, what my younger two are doing, or you would have never let us, you know, go to a friend's house for 2 nights or go to a cabin with our friends, right? And that just comes with natural maturation, right? And as a father, you know, I mean, I just grew up being a dad. I couldn't even tell you a time that I wasn't a dad. I was 17 when I had a kid. I've always had responsibility.
Yeah, man, that's nuts.
Always, my whole life. I've started my first job when I was 13 years old. I mean, and it was a real job. Like, I used to go every single day after school to this job, and it wasn't a paper route. Okay, it was working with a crew at it. My mom was an administrator for a school, so I would go there during the summer. She would be working, and I would work with the landscaping crew. So they would go around doing everything, picking up everything, making everything nice, and they'd be in the schools fixing the lights, and you know. So I kind of started picking up on like stuff like that, like wiring and electrical and plumbing and all of those things. Now my dad didn't do any of that stuff. Right? He didn't do, if it broke, it was broke. Mm-hmm. He's picking up the phone, calling somebody. But I learned all of those things, and now my sons know how to wire. They know how to plumb. They know how to put in floors. They know how to rip down walls and replace. They.
You got them working.
Yeah, of course. Of course.
and you have them work on the business side of things too, I take it, yeah?
I do. I have them. What I'll do, Trevor, is I'll find a, you know, it might be a beat up house or whatever. I'll take them in the house right after we purchase. Actually, I'll take them over when I go over the very first time, and I'll be looking through the home, taking pictures and doing all that. And I'll say, well, what do you think? Well, you know, it's kind of small in this kitchen, Dad. If you knock down that wall, that's exactly it, son. That's going to force the appreciation of this house, probably $25,000 to $30,000 once we do that. Oh, okay. So, and so he picks up, they just pick it up. They just, you know, you just generally feed it to them very, you know, and they pick it up. And all of a sudden you have somebody who understands your business model almost as good as you do. We could be driving. He goes, oh, you know, we're in a nice neighborhood. Oh man, that house, it's got the grass. It's got the, it looks like the roof has, it's old. It looks like it's got overgrown trees, or look at all the branches on the roof. You ought to call about that house. You're absolutely right, son. That's exactly what I'll do.
That's awesome, man. you got all boys, man. I haven't heard any talk about daughters.
No. I got two daughters.
Okay.
Yep. Yeah, one is 31 and one is 28. Both very successful. I could go off on a whole nother tangent of how proudly I am of them, but both very successful. The oldest one, she lives in Cleveland, doing very, very well. My youngest daughter, she lives in Pittsburgh. She just got married 3 years ago. Happy, healthy, and she's just now starting her doctorate program.
Oh, wow.
So I'm extremely excited about that.
It's fantastic.
They grow up flipping homes too?
No. That was all prior to me.
Yeah, that was the just steel days. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that was they you know what it was, Trevor? They grew up seeing dad go to work. Now, mind you guys, I used to work a swing shift. So first week was, you know, daylight shift, second week was afternoon, third week was midnight, and it rotated like that through the year. Right? So they, and I worked a lot of doubles. I lived at work because I was under the assumption and under the tutelage that a grown man to take care of his family steals time from his family and puts it with his employer so that he can make more money and inject that back into the family, which it's all messed up. It's all wrong. It's all convoluted.
God, that's,
it's all convoluted. It kind of goes back to when I talk about, you know, and you hit on this, the education system, how in the world this ever played, but how would, you know, how the government did this. I'm going to let this 21-year-old kid, he just graduated from Columbia. He owes $190,000 back to the school. He's taken out two or three personal loans for $50,000. Now he's all in for $260,000. He's 21 years old. He has no job. He has no experience. How did that ever materialize still in 2024? That's how we run our educational system.
You know, going back a second, you actually just kind of had an extension to, you know, kind of what we all recognize, you know, you don't want to be training time for money. You know, that's why you want to be able to have staff and be able to, you know, expand your business in such a way that you're not just trading time for money. But you kind of hit the nail on the head. You're not just trading time for money. You're trading your time with your family for money.
That's the only thing.
You're trading your ability to parent for money.
Yes.
And not being around. You're taking the time that your family needs you to be around and be present and giving it to someone else and then giving them money, but not their father. Oh. So that's what you said, you know, hey, that was earlier when you were, you know, younger, you changed that mindset on a go forward.
Yeah. I mean, I had to change that mindset because basically what you're doing is, you know, my wife, she works a full-time job. And she's been at that job for maybe, I don't know, 18, 19 years. But what you're doing, she goes to work at 7, gets home at 4:30, but I would be gone, say I was gone. Now, what I've done is I've basically made myself absent out of her life. Now, I've put all that stress of raising the house and running the house on her because I'm spending 12, 16 hours at my job. So she's already worked her 8 hours every day. Now she's got to come home. She's got to cook, clean, run boys' places. And it just became too much. It's not fair.
Yeah.
It's not a fair scenario that we put our wives in. And we all do it because we feel like we are actually helping them by being absent.
You know, that's, I guess, question, and I'd love to hear both of your guys' takes on this. You know, we're right now debating putting our youngest son in daycare. And, you know, my wife's pregnant with baby number two. We're due in here in another 2 months. So it's coming up very soon.
Awesome.
And our son, we're so excited. And, you know, and my son, who's two and a few months, you know, he's new energy through the roof. I mean, like it is, you know, literally him running full speed through the house, you know, constantly. And there's almost even no walking.
How old?
And, you know, my wife,
how old, Matt?
He's two, he's 2 plus 2 months. So he's just over two.
Yeah.
And, You know, and we're, and my wife is so great about having all kinds of activities. She's got something planned for him Monday through Friday, which is awesome, but she's also 7 months pregnant. And she's in the third trimester and she's doing fantastic, but it's also for her to be playing with him or chasing him or doing things. It's a lot. She is very, very kind of like, I'll call it just thin on the extra energy to do these things. And you know, and the daycare thing has kind of come up in kind of the sense of like, well, are we doing it because we, you know, need help with care, or are we doing it because we want him to get engagement with other kids, or are we doing it because, you know, like what are the reasons behind it? And my personal take is I actually want him to have a little bit more regular engagement. Now my wife has him and all these things Monday through Friday, but when new baby comes along,
yeah, man,
here in April, mm-hmm. you know, we're going like, hey, is that actually realistic to have that done? Because the daycare that we're talking about, it's actually very close to the house. It's you know, so close that we can walk, and we're able to not even have, we don't even have to take him every day. So we could take him.
How does your wife feel about?
Well, that, I mean, that's kind of the reason I'm bringing it up, you know, and both she and I both feel a little more concerned about not seeing him, you know, and it's not long. I mean, we're talking, you know, 4 hours a day mm-hmm. kind of a thing. It's not much, but we both kind of feel like, you know, well, we're going to miss him. You know, that's going to be, you know, us kind of missing him. And it's, and how do we both feel about it? You know, that's the debate, because not the best. We kind of would like to keep him, you know, with us, but
neither
we also feel like, are we not getting him more regular social engagement by having him engage with other kids? And that's, you know, and that's, I think, part of the debate, because, you know, it's
definitely, I think that's BS, man.
Which part?
The social aspect of it. I mean, I thought that too for a while, but I think that's nonsense, man.
Okay.
You know, I mean, on, you know, like, and I've thought about it a lot too. And cause my wife's the same situation. She was watching one kid. That was her one responsibility. COVID happened. She left work, and then our life transpired to where she never had to go back, which was great. She was, you know, raising a kid, you know, Monday through Friday, that was her job. And, the second one came, and it was like totally different. The things that our first child went through, like I saw it clearly, like, you know, the first born child is usually the most successful in life, because they're the only one that had a period of time where the parent's sole focus was on them. There was no other child to distract that focus. And like I saw it, she taught our first kid sign language. What's that?
That's it. You think that they are more
successful? I think that's part of it.
You know, I mean,
I think it's part of it. If we're looking at broad stats, I think that's part of it. Being conscious of it, I think, could help change it. But, you know, at the same...
When you say broad stats, you're right. You're right. If you just divide the number of hours, you have X hours in the course of a week.
Right.
If you have one kid, they get 100%. If you have two kids, yep. Now they both get 50%.
It's some split.
You know, no, I totally agree with you. It's just law of math. The other kids cannot get as much full dedicated time as the first one.
I mean, just as like one small example, my first kid learned sign language. The second one didn't.
That's awesome.
Didn't have. There's no time. There was no time to teach the second child sign language.
Here's the thing, though, guys. Here's the thing. You have a 4 and a 1-year-old. You have a 2-year-old and getting ready. I was very, with my wife and I think our boys are 3.5 years apart. But here's the thing. My oldest son with my wife was her first child. So the three other I had all when I was very young, before I ever even met my wife. Okay. So I understand exactly what you guys are saying. Fully, actually. I actually lived in that spot. I remember thinking, man, there's all kinds of bad stuff that happens at daycare. Are they going to take care of my little baby?
Yeah.
Are they really going to? You know, the good thing is my wife's school was here. The daycare was right maybe 2 minutes away from it. But we did put our oldest in daycare. I think he was two and a half, three. And my biggest drive to do that was I wanted him to, you know, he was here at the house by himself with his mom. He was super spoiled. Like he needed to be exposed to other kids his age, I think. I just wanted him to be around other kids his age because he was, you know, he was, you know, spoiled. His mom's first kid. He was on her hip. You know, he was, and she and I remember when we had this conversation, the idea of putting him into Head Start or whatever. And that it was really the sole driver. Trevor was basically to get him socialized with other kids, mm-hmm. where he understands that I'm not the only guy in the room, right? For him, before he ever went, he was the main attraction everywhere he went. So that's the reason why we got him in early. And then very shortly after, once she had the second one, he followed suit as well. And there was, I certainly see more, there was no harm. There was no harm in sending him.
For sure.
You know what I mean?
So Trevor, let me ask you this.
There was no harm.
I wouldn't suggest there's harm.
Well, so Trevor, so on the daycare side, for our debate right now, you just felt that the social engagement, not necessary. You think that's not like that's not a big problem?
I don't think so, man. I mean, I got the confirmation bias going strong right now. I'm thinking of like the founder of Strategic Coach who grew up on a farm and would only interacted with adults until he went to school when he was six. And as a result of that, he was just like years ahead of all these children who'd only hung out with other dumb children. Right. So like, I see benefits to both, but like, and in my situation, my wife, she participates in our business. So our children are around entrepreneurs all day.
Well, I guess that's the second question.
So, and I love that so much, they're just
seeing. But
this
is my question. So for you and for your wife also, this is what I'm kind of, this is still our debate. Did you feel like your wife had enough time to take care of newborn baby when your older child was there and was in this, where my son is right now, where he is just I don't want to call him a terror because it's great, but I mean, he's got so much energy that we're just going, gosh, like, how do we bridge this? Because, I mean, we could bring in.
Are you asking me?
I mean, I'm just asking opinional. I mean, like, because in that topic, yeah. We're looking at, the daycare where we didn't even have to take him daily. We could take him 1 or 2 days a week. But that's the question. Is it daycare? Do we get assistance at the house or do we not need assistance at the house? And our idea that we are not going to have any time is just incorrect.
I know people who have au pairs. I don't really know how that.
That's, yeah, I like that idea.
I mean, I like that idea too, Trevor. If I worked at home, I don't know that I would really want to give up that much time with some stranger with my kid, yeah. Because now my kid, when he's crying in the middle of the night, he's going to be crying for that au pair, not me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I don't think we would have some. I mean, I'm not concerned about having someone in the night. And, and that's something that I definitely, my wife and I both, we're both up with him.
Just a daytime nanny, the daytime nanny that comes a few days a week for a few hours.
And that's probably our debate right now where we're weighing the cost of.
You have family close?
Say again.
You got family close?
No. I mean, we do, but our family that's close, my father, he's 87. And so he's not going to be, doing a lot of the childcare and my wife, has family around, but I think I don't think it would be, I don't think we could set it up regularly. I don't think we could have an expectation of, hey, these 3 days a week, you're here.
Right.
And, yeah. And we have several friends who have, I'll call it, nannies who are on a regular schedule, 3 days a week or whatever it is. They have the scheduled plans, and that might be the better way to do it, so that we're always just still here present.
I like that. And it sounds like you're leaning that way.
We'll find out. I mean, I think that this is a current. I mean, this is literally a topic that we are discussing right now. So we've been dragging our feet on it because I don't think we've really felt comfortable about having him enrolled in the daycare yet.
That's a big indicator.
And my wife and I, as kids, I went to a daycare when I was a kid, and it was a neighbor who had. I mean, I don't even know what it would be considered today, but man, there must have been 13 to 20 kids there running around. And it was
unregulated childcare.
Well, it was in a small town, Carpinteria.
And it
was great. Yeah. It was great. And it's funny because I graduated high school with all of these kids that I was in daycare with as a 3, 4, and 5-year-old. And I remember it. I remember it then. And, and when we see each other in town, we always still have this kind of like we had this, from a very, very young age. But it was also a couple blocks.
You won't miss what you never had, dude. Your kid won't miss what he never had.
But the school that we're evaluating, it's different than what we had anyway. Literally, I'm describing a friend's, a friend of my mom's who had these kids at the house and they all played together all day. The place that we're looking at, it's a school, it's a daycare school. Yeah. They've got courses, they've got these kids in there doing, you know, it's a Montessori style program, which is very regimented actually. And that's not something I'm not sure I care about it as much. They say this, they say, when you go to Montessori school that they view going to the school as a job. And that's something I know. I see both your faces, the same thing that I had where I'm like, you know, I kind of don't want my kid getting into that programming at this age. And that's why it's been.
You don't want him to hate it.
Yeah.
He's going to have 14 years of school. You don't want him hating his first year.
Yeah. Well, they view it as, they kind of say they treat it as a job, but it's a little bit more self-sufficient in everything they do. So they have like one thing they do, then they clean up, you know, from that particular task, and they go to the next task. So there's a lot of what they would describe as active doing of things, which I don't think that by itself is necessarily bad. You know, as a male, I've got a very intrinsic work ethic. Now, my view of where that work should be spent has changed as I've learned about being an entrepreneur and whether or not I'm working to make someone else more money or working to make myself money. But I do recognize this kind of nature of, because even with your boys doing all their sports, boys need it. They need it.
Boys and girls are different.
Well, I wouldn't say that girls don't, but I can't speak from the experience level of a female. I can only speak from the experience level of myself, which is that if I am not busy, if I'm not working, if I have idle time, no way. My emotional state goes down. My confidence level goes down. All of these things. If I am not actively being useful and productive, I notice it on an internal basis where I go, no, that is not me. I'm a worker. I'm a productive member of everything I do, where I am working and hustling and making things happen. And that is, and that's something that I go, you know, where does that start? And where does that, you know, go for boys and for your sons being in school, in sports, when you were mentioning track and basketball, and what were the sports you named several. They're very engaged.
We got track, basketball, soccer, baseball, football, everything. They do everything. And they don't do golf or tennis.
And all of those things, while they might be, I'll call it leisure in the sense that they're not getting paid for them yet, those are things they are working. They are working towards accomplishments. They are being productive. They have effort. They have a regimented schedule where they're going to practice. They have competitions, which they need to make wins. And they have all these things that are building them. And those are things that I want to make sure that my son and daughter are engaged in, where they get those confidence-based wins based on work that they have achieved. Work that they have.
So does this daycare have a flag football team?
Tennis. I'm making a joke. But
I like tennis.
when we got there, you know, they had the kids. They were already doing things, is my point. They were already doing activities. On the counterbalance of just what we do with our kids, my wife takes my son to something every single day. He's got gymnastics. There's a nature center, it's an education center. She's got him enrolled in another mom group where they do these fun activities. We're going to start him here soccer here very soon on a Saturday, which I'm looking forward to, because that's going to be with me taking him to go do that. But 5 days a week, my wife has him in something that she is there with him, where he's got a different skill he is learning, even starting at this age. And
let me ask you this though, Max, real quick, what happens when your wife starts to get a little tired?
That's what we're working through. That's what we're trying to figure out right now.
Yeah.
And she will get to her wit's end. Like, you know, like I can only like get down and be on the floor.
Yeah.
I'm doing this so much, you know, she still needs her friend group and wants to be around other, you know, other grown ups, so to speak. She doesn't want to always talk baby talk all day.
I know it. We talk about it frequently where, you know, I'll be spending time with my son and I love him and I love it. But I also go, wow, like it's a little taxing.
Hard.
Well, it's hard when it's when you have to maintain it for a long period of time, because you know we've got things to do, and you know you're playing it at the level of a toddler, and you know and in that way, you know, you can engage for it long enough. But yeah, you kind of nailed it on the head. You know, there's this kind of point where there is burnout. There's this
total burnout.
Girls are so easy, man.
Girl daughter different than the boy.
Right now, Trevor, you wait till she's older and she gets
the change.
I myself would have a plan
for that. I keep hearing the same thing and I got a plan, man.
When they come to you, Trevor, and you're like, well, listen, I told you to clean your room, and then tears. And then it's like, you know, and it's just like, it's different. It's a different conversation with a boy. Son, I told you to go in there and clean your room. And he understands that if I have to tell you again and again and again, then we're going to have to escalate, right? Girls, they'll get you right off the bat. Hey, honey, I see you're sitting here on a nice Saturday morning. Could you go in there and clear your room? Oh, my gosh. And it's just theatrics.
baby.
I promise you.
Oh, baby, man. Number two, yes,
girl. Hey, girl, are you really?
Yeah.
Good for you.
I know.
Good for you.
I know. It's great.
So yesterday I got to say it was a win for me. I just felt like, you know, my wife went to go work on a property that we're working on, and she took the baby, the 1-year-old, and the 4-year-old stayed home with me the whole day, and she built a Lego set. Then she did, like, right next to my desk. She has a little desk, right? So she sat down at her desk and built a Lego set. Her first time doing it on her own, right? She asked she's done a couple of Lego sets now. I'm trying to kind of get her into Legos instead of dolls. You know, I don't know. I feel like it's a little bit better. But anyways, then she did 2 rounds of Hooked on Phonics.
Oh.
Yep. And then I let her watch whatever she wanted after that. And she interrupted me like a grand total of 10 minutes of my work day. Mm. You know, and just otherwise just
simulate it. Keep them mentally
just did her thing. Okay. Yeah, man. And I try to make it so like most of the day is do what you want, explore your tablet, whatever. I don't just spend some part of the day first, earn it with some like, you know, build something, follow instructions and build something, learn something. Then get the reward. And I just want to share that with you guys because, you know, I was just a brief experience that I'm having, Max, with 2 kids. You're going to be in the same situation.
What Legos does she like?
She picked this one, and it's a horse stable. Yeah, I'll show you the box.
Yeah, it's interesting. There's a book, and it's called...
this is it. Lego Friends.
There it is.
Boom. Okay. Right? I gotcha.
It's a horse stable.
It looks like it's four girls. It's
got some girls in it. She likes girly stuff, man. She's a girly girl. It's got a lady here that's like... clean. It's all girls.
Yeah,
actually, in it. So
I've actually never thought about. I mean, hell, guys, they didn't even do. Girls, when I had my daughter, they played with dolls. That was it. You know, that they played with dolls and the girly stuff. But I really like how they have made Legos and, you know, girl figures. When we grew up, yeah. Legos were boy toys. They were like GI Joes. Stuff. They were like, you know. Yep. But I like
and she
that.
Goes that's straight cool. for them. She goes straight for the Legos with she like asks for it. She's like, I want those.
That one.
The ones with the girls. You know, the first Lego set I ever bought her was a girl that ran an ice cream truck. I was like, build this entrepreneur, right? That's an entrepreneur right there. There you go. And she loved it. And ever since then, she just gravitates towards girls doing things that, you know, she's about
that's
it.
Great.
And instill that in her and, you know, make her strong from the beginning. You know? I like that. I love that.
That's the goal. Yeah, man. So that's my, and hopefully if I like take her hunting, maybe get her chewing some tobacco, like by the time she's like a teenager, she'll be a little bit more emotionally stable than like the boys are or something.
Oh, God. We'll see, man. I mean, I remember being in high school with girls, they'd have a big old dip in their mouth. Like, what the? That's very unattractive.
Really? Wow.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Oh, dead serious. Yeah. Big old.
It's jarring.
Copenhagen dip in her. Yeah, man.
What did they carry around to chaw in? Was it like a pink cup or was it like a
pink cup? They just spit in the registers like the boys used to do back in school. And then we used to have these registers and the boys would spin them and the girls
the
did
spittoons?
Too. Yeah.
The ding.
Yep.
Oh my God.
My word.
Takes all kinds, brother. It takes all kinds.
Things have changed. Wow.
They have.
Mightily so.
So, Matthew, thanks for being on the show with us. This has been fantastic. You know, both hearing about all of your experiences from being, I'll call it a young dad to a dad with 5 kids to being someone who's balanced your work life, importantly in the way that, you know, that you've really made sure that you're spending time with your family and being there. And you shared some really wonderful stories about, interactions with your kids, interaction with your wife. And I'm so thankful that we have you on the show. And people can connect with Matthew via Matthew. Please give us your website and your Instagram.
Sure. Absolutely. My Instagram is I am Matthew Roach, all one word. You can connect with me via, my website, which is Guardian Home Buyers, the numeric 1.com, Or you can just search me under Facebook, Matthew Roach.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Matthew, thanks so much for being on the show. And we'll look forward to having you on again. Yeah. And we'll hear more on the updates with you and your family here with the next episode that we have you on.
Love it, guys. Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks for the knowledge bombs, dude.
Really awesome.
Awesome, man. Thank you.